Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, we're going to kick off today's show with Russian author Marina Sankina. I'll introduce her in just one moment. Coming up around 12:25, we'll talk with Danny Kofka. And he's a special ed teacher. You might remember him from a year or so ago with a stay-at-home wife and two kids. And you might think that he's been struggling in this economy. On a teacher's salary. And he's joining us today to say that that's not true. We can live well on a teacher's salary, on less than average income, and we can teach our kids too as well. And, you know, in light of the holidays coming up and great expectations from kids all around about the holidays, I thought this would be a good segment to cover with Danny. He really is 100% sincere in his message, and I'm just amazed at the work he's done over the last couple of years around this particular topic. And we're going to end today's show with Gina Rudin, who says that for years her creative, passionate self battled constantly with her corporate, strategic self. Boy, can I relate to that one? She realized that many of her clients also experienced that same battle. So if you find yourself presenting one face at the office and your real self at home, Gina Rudin's five-step genius plan can help you start living more authentically in all aspects of your life. First, I'm very pleased to welcome Marina Sankina and her latest work, Lucia's Eyes and Other Stories. Marina taught literature and linguistics at Moscow State University before escaping the Soviet Union with her two young sons. She lived in Toronto and Montreal. She worked as a CBC producer and documentary film researcher, and now writes and teaches at University of British Columbia and Simon Fraser University. Marina Sankina, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank
you. Such an interesting background, Marina. I was telling you before the show that I really want to share some of your story with our listeners. And I'd like to go back to when you were living in Russia and when you left the Soviet Union with your two young sons. Tell us what was going on at that time and why you left.
Well, you know, I left in 1987, and we had no premonition of what was to come. The word perestroika was unknown. I left on the brink of it, but I say, as I am saying, we can only live in the present, maybe in the past, but it's hard to look into the future. And so as far as I'm concerned, my children were just cannon meat for the war in Afghanistan, which was raging then. As you remember, Brezhnev started the war in 1980, and there was no choice. I had sons. They would go to the army, and the Russian army was quite brutal. So that was my preoccupation, number one. And generally, Brezhnev's times were not exactly as bad as Stalin's times. They were, as Russians would say, vegetarian times. They didn't eat you alive. They didn't send you to concentration camps just because you had a poetry reading with your neighbor. They just maybe confiscate all the books, which they did with me. But still, it was a very difficult existence, both politically, emotionally. I just felt that I had no air to breathe, really, that it was kind of lead that going into my lungs.
And I think most of us just I don't think people can imagine what that's like unless you've actually lived through that experience, and especially when you've got two young sons like that and you know what's waiting for them. Must have been a horrifying time for you. Why did you choose to go to Canada?
Well, to a great degree, it was accidental. It was really a very narrow path. I mean, we didn't have a lot of choice. We could go, I'm Jewish, so I could go to Israel, but I don't know the language, and generally that was not my choice. I had some connections at Toronto University, And that worked, and then I went from there. I mean, they didn't work. That was just a little hint, a little connection, but I still was a refugee, basically, with my two kids. And then I went from there, from the refugee status and trying to find the first job and struggling. But, you know, and I suppose I have up my sleeve all these immigrant stories like everybody else's.
Right, right. Well, it certainly must have been a very challenging time, and you've done very well for yourself. I want to take a quick break because I want to get into the next leg of your life, and I don't want to interrupt you in that. So we're going to take a very quick break right now, and we'll be back with Marina Sankina, and her new book is called Lucia's Eyes and Other Stories. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Forget their space and come check out our space on the web, 1150kknw.com, and find out about Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and I'm talking in this segment with Marina Sankina, Russian author, who escaped the Soviet Union with her two young children, has lived in Canada for a long, long time now. So continuing your journey, Marina, you arrive in Canada, you at some point become a CBC producer, documentary film researcher. You lived in Toronto, you lived in Montreal. Why move? I believe you're now in Vancouver, is that correct?
I am in Vancouver and I'm enjoying it. Is the question why I moved there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To put it very bluntly, the CBC job, which I really loved, there were budget cuts, and in one day, 2,000 people were let go, and I was among them. So I wanted to return to my academic career, which I did for a while. But then Quebec was really on the rocks, Montreal, in terms of they had referendum and they wanted to separate, and all the jobs were gone. And then basically I put the globe in front of me and turned it around, whirled it around and said, what's the next point? Where do I go?
I love it.
I had some offers. I actually had offers from the Voice of America in Washington, because people from there came over right away and interviewed us, and I passed the interview. But by that time, I had two elderly parents that I took upon myself the responsibility of looking after, and I couldn't possibly left for U.S. And I am a urban girl, so there are not that many cities in Canada, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I love nature, and Vancouver was my choice.
It does have the best. It has a nice big city and some
beautiful
landscape.
It's really
up there.
Beautiful.
Yes.
I didn't know what's in store, but I guess I accumulated this habit of just jumping off the board and then swim, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, it seems
sort of craziness. I don't know.
No, it seems to have worked out pretty well for you. I think listening to your intuition has paid off for you. I want to talk about your book a little bit, about Lucia's Eyes and Other Stories, a collection of short stories.
Right.
Again, it takes place in very different countries, different protagonists. Tell us a little bit about the book in your own words, if you would.
Well, the book is a collection of short stories, and so they came to fruition in different times and places, and it usually takes for me a long time from beginning to end of the story. So the stories were written in different time period. The one that gave the title to the whole collection, The Eyes of Santa Lucia, was actually the oldest of them, and that's the first one that I switched languages. You know, just like Nabokov. Sorry, I don't mean to compare myself with this great writer, but there was a point where I decided to switch from Russian into English, and that's the first one that I wrote in English, The Eyes of Santa Lucia. It's about a little boy who is an artist in Russia in the 30s, but he is a hunchback. And so he lives through the turmoil of the 30s when his father is taken away. He falls in love with a Spanish girl. He's an eight-year-old. So here we go.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned, the protagonists, the locations are different. One takes place in Mexico, another in the United States, some in Canada, they're all, and some in Russia.
Right. One of them is called Christmas Tango, and I have to mention here, you are a tango dancer.
Well, I do happen to, you know, to switch from computer to tango. I find it very therapeutic and exalting, actually. I love tango, and I dance tango, and it's a whole world of its own. It's quite amazing in terms of its music, and, you know, you can go to any city in the world. In Finland, for example, Helsinki is a huge center for tango. Who would think, to say
really?
Nothing of Paris and, of course, yeah. Buenos Aires. And you can just connect with people through internet, and they put you up if you're a tango person. It's a whole world of its own.
Yeah, I understand you come down here to Seattle and Portland
yes,
a lot.
Yes, I'm coming this coming Friday, and I have a book reading at Third Place Books at Lake Forest Park, and I probably will do some. I used to do tango demonstrations together with book reading. Well, if there are tango dancers at hand, please welcome and we'll have fun, all of us. We'll combine.
There you go. If you're listening to this and you're feeling the mood for a tango, Third Place
yes,
Books on
I'm
Friday.
Always in the mood for tango.
And you come down to Seattle and Portland to dance a lot, I understand. I didn't realize
it
was so big.
There are great tango communities in Seattle and in Portland. And so because I don't have a real tanganiero is supposed to be able to dance with anybody. So I don't have a permanent partner to dance with. And I'm just looking forward to any man who would pick me up for tango.
Well, now there's an offer.
Well, I am very blunt, you know.
And now, do you have a piece of one of your stories that you're going to read for us today?
Well, I could read from Tango, but let me see. Shall I read from Tango?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, just
whatever I choose.
A
I have 1 minute
piece,
about
yeah.
that, right?
Yes, yeah.
Well, the Tango story is set in Montreal, actually, and it's the protagonist is a young man, and it's the first person is written in his voice, and he's very accidentally he appears in Tango scene, and he's just basically looking. He wants to pick up a woman, and he was told, "Well, go and dance Tango." So he started learning it, and it was much more difficult than he thought it would. But finally, he got into that. And he says, I now felt the addiction of tango. It was like life itself, repetitive yet always new, full of unforeseen trickery, archness, and drama. It teased me with rich promises that were immediately taken away and bestowed upon me sudden, unexpected blessings. Like life, it had a powerful undercurrent, an all-penetrating pulse, that could drown you if you were not attuned to it. You had to dissolve yourself in tango in music and let the music carry you to the place of your greatest fear and sadness and take you out of it and bring you back. Well, you had to take its dark throbbing into your very veins and look into the abyss it was leading you to. You were naked in tango. You couldn't hide, no more than one can hide from life. You had to trust tango as a newborn baby trusts his existence. You had to be exuberant, cruel but gentle, while the music was still playing. So that's just a little bit.
That puts tango in a whole new light for me.
Well, because, you know, in tango, for ladies, it's difficult to follow. How do you know? They're not whispering into your ear what's the next step. So you really have to be intuitive. And for me, it's a metaphor for life because it's unpredictable. And life is unpredictable, too. You have to be ready for anything.
Right. Now, I know that you're a teacher of literature, linguistics. And I want to ask you this because I've got two or three Russian friends, and I have found that they have a great appreciation for the arts and literature in general. Do you think that we in the West maybe take arts and literature for granted more than...
You see, in the West, there are other venues. There is political. As a friend of mine, who is a well-known poet, said to me 20 years ago, he said, Marina, look, if I were allowed to go to Bahamas or to write a poem, sweating over writing it for 10 months, and maybe I'll come up with a good line, what would I choose? I would go to Bahamas. Well, he was joking, of course. But the point is that this was, you know, we didn't, in the Soviet times, we didn't have political life, we didn't have freedom of expression, and literature was one way. Traditionally, Russian writers were like oracles. Maybe they shouldn't have that role, but it was felt that they don't speak gratuitously in vain. They really represent, well, grand ideas. Yes, I think Russia, traditionally, going back to the 19th century, held writers in great esteem.
Mm-hmm.
It may be changing now, of course, because there are more choices in life. And the young people want to be just like Western people. But still, culture is very important.
Right. And have you been back to Russia since you've
been I've been in Russia
here?
Many times because one of my sons returned to Russia to get the education. He's quite a famous actor, actually, stage and film actor. And yes, I go to his premieres or whatever.
Right, interesting. And do you
trying
think
to catch him there.
Yeah. Do you think life is a lot easier? Because we hear mixed stories that it's got harder again.
Well, it's easier for the rich, and it's much more harder for the poor. And we can, of course, draw parallels, you know, with life in the United States.
Mm.
But just the numbers themselves, Moscow has the largest number of billionaires on this earth. 73 billionaires. It's higher than in New York.
Yeah, I read that somewhere a while back and was quite shocked.
So it is really very hard for people who don't know how to steal, don't know how to, want to be teachers or want to be doctors. The intelligentsia suffers most. The new generation who managed to, particularly former bureaucrats, former KGB people, they shared the pie and they're doing well. On the one hand, there are freedoms in Russia. You can travel. There is no iron curtain anymore. And there is food to eat. Mm-hmm. In my times, you couldn't actually get food to feed your children or yourself. The situation has changed now. But still, it's very precarious because I think Putin will come to power. And giving his KGB background, I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Mm, interesting times. So I also want to let our listeners know that you write children's books. And one of them that I saw was The Violin That Wanted to See the World, which was a lovely book. Author and editor Martha Roth writes this about you. She says in Lucia's Eyes and Other Stories that these stories display a masterly range of emotional tones from ice-hard brilliance to mordant wit to sheer lyricism. She's a writer to treasure and tells memorable tales in succulent, satisfying, and elegant prose. What a wonderful
writer. You're very generous. Too generous.
So a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with. We want to remind them that you're going to be at Third Place Books in Seattle at the Lake Forest one on Friday, November 5th. That's this coming Friday at 6:30. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Marina?
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Well, we're pleased you could join us today. And again, my guest, Marina Sonkina, the book is Lucia's Eyes and Other Stories. Marina Sonkina. Please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be talking with Danny Kafka. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicky at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Stay informed with news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour, weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. My next guest today is Danny Kofke. He's a special ed teacher. He was a guest on our show a couple of years ago after his first book came out, and that was called How to Survive and Perhaps Thrive on a Teacher's Salary. And he's done amazing work since then. Earlier this month, Danny and his wife were featured on CBS Early Show, and he's joining us today to talk about his new book, A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, Teach Yourself and Your Kids How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. Danny Kofke, welcome.
Hey, Vicky. Thank you so much for having me back on.
Well, it's my pleasure, Danny. I know you have a very sincere message that you want to share with people, especially in these economic times. And I'm going to begin with a quote that came from an article that you'd written. You say a lot of people think that financial matters and investing are difficult and are intimidated by it. I want to show others that if this 35-year-old school teacher can figure it out, they can too. So I'm assuming, and I think from talking before, that this has been a long-term thing for you. I know when you and your wife got married, you sat down and you had a talk about how you were going to manage money and everything. Why do you think it's so important to both be on the same page?
Well, you know, it's just one of those things that I'll go back a little bit. When in a relationship, there's a lot of times that opposites kind of do attract, and we hear that. And usually in a marriage, one person is more of the spender and one is more of the saver. So knowing that, I mean, it does happen. But if you both have complete opposite goals, it just makes not a fun time. If one person is focused on saving for retirement or building up an emergency fund or some other type of financial goals, whereas the other person just wants to blow everything that comes in on whatever they want, well, it's not too hard to see why that marriage probably will not last, because you're going to have frustration because you don't see eye to eye. So having communication, open communication with your spouse is really, really important. And working on those goals together, not only do they strengthen your bank account, but it also strengthens your marriage in more ways than you even realize. And even with us, we have no debt except our mortgage, so we do pretty well financially and manage money well. But life gets crazy sometimes. And with a 7- and a 4-year-old and then working and then with book and everything else that's going on, life, there's some days it's just like, man, I'm done. And we don't have debt collectors calling and people that are harassing us because we don't have enough money to pay our bills. So you throw that into the equation, I can see why so many people do end up divorcing.
Right.
And money may not be the primary reason, but I think in a lot of instances, it might be the straw that breaks the camel's back, and it just kind of adds so much stress. So it's really, really important to work with your spouse on money matters.
Yeah, they do say it's right up there with one of the top arguments in marriage, money issues. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about, we've got the holidays coming up, and we live in this world of instant gratification. And, you know, kids have tremendous expectations because millions are spent on advertising to them. And then, of course, they have peer pressure at school. So I want to get into that, but I just want to put things in perspective for our listeners here. You earn a little over $40,000, which is apparently $10,000 less than the average household income. Your wife was a stay-at-home mom for 6 or 7 years. You mentioned that you have no debt except for your mortgage. Your cars are paid for. You have a lovely home. I saw it on the early show. They came in and filmed. So we know you're not living in a tin shack
somewhere. That's right.
But at some point, you did have debt, and you guys sat down and worked out how to go about this. And one of the things that you talk about is, you know, some financial advisors do say pay off the largest debt. You went for paying off the smallest debt, or the debt with the most interest rate. You went for paying off the smallest debt, first of all, because there's some kind of emotional accomplishment to achieving that. So how did you guys decide when you were in debt how you were going to get out of it?
Well, we just had goals in mind of where we wanted to be. And obviously, living off $40,000 a year and having my wife be able to stay at home and having children to raise, if we had a lot of debt and huge mortgage and car payments and all those things, it would be next to impossible to live off $40,000 a year. So that's kind of where we knew that if this was the choice we were making, we were going to have to get rid of the debt. And we started, like I mentioned, we started with the smallest first because you build traction. If you list your debts, and because some people say pay off the debt with the highest interest rate first, and that absolutely makes sense from a mathematical point of view, but most of us aren't in financial trouble because of the math. We know it's not healthy and wise to use credit cards, but we still do. So that's the thing. You kind of have to trick yourself emotionally, and when you start off with a small obtainable goal and you conquer it, then you feel good about yourself. It's very similar to a diet. If you go on a diet, let's say you're 40 pounds overweight, you're not going to try to lose 40 pounds in 2 weeks. But in that first week, if you lose 2 pounds, the next week you lose 3 pounds, you take those smaller steps, you build traction, you get confidence to say, man, I can do this, and then ultimately your goal will be achieved down the road. Same thing with money. By paying off the smaller debt first, you're building towards that final destination, but you're also giving yourself a morale boost so you can accomplish it and say, man, I can do this, because so many people, like you mentioned earlier, they're intimidated by finances. They don't think they can do it. My parents weren't able to do it. I'll never be able to do it. But here's some area that you can take control, and it's just a little boost. You say, man, I paid off that debt, and you want to keep going. And then you pay off another debt, and you feel confident, and you just keep going and going. And I just think that's probably the best way, because you do have to trick yourself emotionally. And most of us, like I said, got into debt. It wasn't because of the math. It was because of the emotion.
Right. And you said that you were mocked at first. You know, people would mock you because you were living off one salary when your wife was working and you were trying to get out of debt. Amazing how that happens, right? People who are broke are mocking you for that.
I know. Well, you know, unfortunately, it still happens even today. We were recently mentioned on Yahoo.com. It was the front page of Yahoo, and the story generated almost 6,000 comments. And I would say a majority of them were just mean and cruel, and, oh, this guy can live off $40,000 a year. Try doing it in New York City, or just making excuses. And that's so hard because I just want to try to help people and show them that they can do it. But so many people right now, I think, are so discouraged. And there's two ways to better yourself. You can either, A, make a change, which for a lot of people is very difficult, or B, you can cut someone else down, which kind of makes you feel better about yourself for a moment. And I think that is the same thing we were discovering when we were paying off our debt and people were laughing and making fun of us. I think deep down inside, a lot of those people were insecure and maybe not envious, but they thought, gosh, I wish we could do the same things that they're doing. But instead of making that change, it's easier just to laugh at someone and mock them. So
right.
It's just one of those things, and for your listeners, when you are trying to work, and it's not necessarily just money, but a lot of people, even with weight, if you have a friend and you're losing weight, sometimes they get jealous and cut you down. So you just have to know when you're making a change in your life and you're trying to better yourself, there probably will be people out there that are going, they might make fun of you. So you're just going to have to develop some thick skin. And if you know you're doing what is right for you and your family, then sometimes it makes it easier to not really worry about what others think.
Right. Well, I actually have a copy of that article, and I was amazed, first of all, how many comments they got, because you did get nearly 6,000 comments on that article. And then I was amazed by, there were a lot of people who did support you and say that they mm-hmm. too lived off less than $40,000
right.
a year. But I mean, this one said $40,000 a year, where? In Florida, very possible. In Washington, D.C. or New York, are you nuts?
Right.
But they didn't
right.
They didn't
well,
get into the how.
Well, and there's the thing. I chose not to live in New York City or Washington, D.C. I chose to live in Georgia.
Exactly.
So that to me is one of those things that, and if I did live in New York City, I would make more money as a teacher. So it's all, I mean, it's not relative. I know the cost of living is higher there, but just one of those things that it's unfortunate, I think, and maybe people are starting to change, but just that instead of trying to learn, a lot of people still continue to down others and make fun of them and mock them
yeah.
when they too can make the change and make their lives better if they
right.
really analyze it.
Right. Well, enough about them, because the book has some great information in it. And I want to talk in particular about how you handle the holidays, how you have conversations with your children. They're very young. You have conversations with your 7-year-old daughter, Ava, about college,
right.
about how much you earn, about what kind of bills are going out. And you do say you recognize that most of that does go over her head. But then every so often she comes up with a little nugget of wisdom that you're just amazed that she's absorbed.
Right.
And one of the things that you said was you started, instead of just giving her an allowance when she was 3 years old, you actually paid her for some simple household chores. So talk about that and how you got her involved in being responsible for money herself.
Right. Well, we started with when she did turn 3, and I'll say up front, I'm not a big fan of paying people for things that they should be doing, but I did make an exception at this point, and some of the chores that she had to do were very easily obtainable. Cleaning your room, making your bed, things like that most 3-year-olds can do. Can be a little difficult, but they should be able to do those. But my main purpose was to teach her money management skills. And what we would do, we had 3 jars labeled. One is labeled giveaway, one is savings, and the other is labeled spending. And then when she was 3, she had these chores to do during the week, and we would put a smiley face by it each day. And at the end of the week, we would see if she did them all. And if she did, she would get paid, and she could earn, it was only up to $1 a week. But then when she got paid, we would take, first we would take 10%, so if it was $1, we would take a dime. First goes in the giveaway jar. Then we would take 25% or a quarter, that would go in the savings jar, and the rest goes in the spending jar. So we did that with easy chores until she turned 6. Once she turned 6, I kind of thought she had the money management part down and kind of had those basic principles. So I said, well, I'm going to change it a little bit. Now those chores that you have been doing are expected of you as a member of our house, but I'm going to give you a 50% raise. But now every Sunday you have to go around and gather the garbage and bring it to me so I can take it out. And also you have to clean your bathroom. And Tracy showed her, my wife showed her how to clean it. This included scrubbing the mirrors, scrubbing the toilet, and just doing those things. But I told her, if you do this, instead of making $1 a week, you'll now make $1.50. And there's some weeks that she doesn't do it, but she really has latched on for the most part, and she enjoys it. Just a couple weeks ago, she actually went above and beyond and even cleaned the bathroom. I mean, she really did a dynamite job. So I actually threw in a little, I think I gave her an extra quarter. I said, wow, that's really good. You went above and beyond. But what I wanted to show her now is that if you go above and beyond, now that she had a basic understanding of money management, if you go above and beyond in your job, which most 6-year-olds are probably not scrubbing their toilets, so if you do things that most people aren't doing, you will usually get rewarded. And in this case, it was with more money. So just little things like that I try to instill in her at this young age that hopefully will carry over. And we, like you mentioned, we're very open and honest about money with her. There's so many people that maybe because they're embarrassed that money is a taboo topic, but I'm very open and honest with both of my children. And Ella, my youngest, is 4, so she doesn't understand it quite as much as Ava, but you know, they see things that they want, and I explain to them, look, this is how much I make a month. I have to pay the mortgage. I have to pay for our food, your clothes, the heat when it gets cold, and those things. And I run through, this is how much we pay. So at the end of the month, this is how much money I have left. We do have an emergency fund, but that is for emergencies. And I'm just very open. And that way, hopefully, they see that I'm not just saying no because I'm a mean, horrible dad. I'm saying no because we have priorities first that we have to take care of. And we still do fun things. Don't get me wrong. We do things every now and again, but we just, I guess we don't have it all. And I think that's what's gotten so many people into trouble is they want it all, and they don't always take the time to appreciate what they have. And let me tell you, since we don't really go out to dinner that much as a family, when we do, it's a special treat. And
right.
Both girls really enjoy it, and they don't take it for granted because they know it is something special. So I think, to me, just being open and honest with your children is the best thing. And if you have made money mistakes, instead of being ashamed of them, explain it to your child and say, you know what, we messed up, and it's okay. Everyone in life makes mistakes, but the important thing is that we learn from them. So I think you kind of have an open policy and just explain it to them, and you can start when they are pretty young.
Right, right. And, you know, before we let you go today, Danny, I just want to say that, let our listeners know that, you know, you're a special ed teacher. You could sit and whine about, you know, how little you get paid. You've written 2 books now. You've got yourself on USA Today, The Atlanta Journal, CNN.com, Parade, CBS Money Watch, Fox. I mean, the list goes on. You've been interviewed on over 150 radio shows and TV shows. CBS Early Show did a special on you last week. I think persistence is another great characteristic that you have. And we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago who talked about you must be relentlessly persistent. And I said to you, you know, we didn't have a spot to fit you into for a while, for a couple of weeks, but you kept coming back to me very politely and very persistently. And I wanted to just talk about what keeps you going, what keeps you being so persistent on this message.
I just think I have a valuable message to share. I feel like I was placed, we're all placed here for a reason, but I feel like I have been given a gift that I'm able to share because I am a school teacher. I feel people can relate to me. I'm not a CEO of a company. I'm not making a large salary. Even though people think now that you have 2 books, you're this best-selling author, and it really, if you're not an author, it's just, unless you write a love story about vampires or something like that, it's not a...
There's not a lot of money in it.
Usually don't make a lot of money.
Right.
It's okay, but I can't quit my day job. But
right.
But I just feel like, I guess because I do have such a powerful message to share that I'm not afraid of being told no. And my wife, I mean, sometimes she shakes her head. She's like, I can't believe you email people and you're just not afraid to. But I look at it, the worst that could happen is they say no. And then I'm in the same situation that I was before I emailed them or contacted them. So I think that's with anything. Just if you feel strongly about something, just go for it. The worst that can happen is you're told no. And to me, it's better to try and maybe fail, I guess, than to not have tried at all. So I just kind of look at it like that. But yeah, and I guess because I do feel like I have this message to share that I do, I'm really not afraid to just try to help people out and just see what will happen.
Yeah, and it's, you know, authentically who you are, and it's your passion. And I appreciate you being with us today, Danny. Danny's new book is called A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, Teach Yourself and Your Kids How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. Where can people find out more about you, Danny? Because I know you have several sites.
Probably the easiest way, if you just Google search my name, so Danny Kofke, D-A-N-N-Y-K-O-F as in Frank, K-E. Usually the first thing that comes up is my blog page. So there's you can learn a lot about me there, order my books, send me an email, and just watch some of my interviews as well.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Danny.
Hey, Vicki, thank you for having me on again.
Sure, all the best to you.
You too.
And please stay with us when we come back. We're going to talk about practical genius. We're going to talk about if you have one face at work and another at home, let's get that merged and let's start living a more authentic life with Gina Rudin. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
You can't always you want. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, well, you might find.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL. Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW-IMHO. Copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicki at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772. 4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Spread the word. Your favorite shows are on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. I nearly swallowed the microphone. Oh, that was a shock. My next guest is Gina Rudan. She's the president of Genuine Insights, Inc., a professional development and training practice with the mission of leveraging the genius within individuals and organizations. And Gina's been a guest lecturer, trainer, and strategist for organizations such as Merck Company, the BET Network, the United States Department of Agriculture, and the Stern School of Business at New York University, among many others. In 2010, she was selected as one of POTA magazine's top 20 under 40 Hispanics in the United States. She's the author of Practical Genius, The Real Smarts You Need to Get Your Passions and Talents Working for You. Gina Rudan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to begin with this because this is something that, I mean, the whole premise of the book really is about this and something that I've struggled with and I suspect many people struggle with. You say that you were fighting a battle. Creative, passionate Gina was battling the corporate strategic Gina. What was going on with you?
For many years, I majored in English literature in undergraduate school, and for many years I would wake up during my corporate life to write at night and to do research and to ponder my ideas in the privacy of my home office. And it was like my secret. And it was a creative outlet that I would scratch at probably from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. And I went through a life change 4 years ago where I went to have pretty routine corrective eye surgery, got a rare infection, lost my sight for 4 days, and realized if I got my sight back that I was going to need to change my entire life, because although I had achieved great corporate success, it wasn't enough for me. And it wasn't enough because I had compromised the creative side of who I was, and I was also compromising my intellectual curiosities around wanting to write. So I got my sight back, thank God, and 2 months after that life-changing experience, I left my corporate cocoon to do research on genius and to finally write the book I had longed to write, And basically the premise is similar to what most of us battle with is, do we have to be two people? Do we have to be one way, 9 to 5, the strategic, logical, professional side of us, and then we're another way on the weekends or at 3 a.m. when we're honoring our our creative curiosities? And I realized that genius and those that I researched that were really producing great work and experiencing great life fulfillment and success had meshed all of the assets of who they were, and they weren't compromising one side of their identity for another, and were living from this pure place of authenticity, and decided to explore that notion in the lives of others as well as in my own life, and it's been life-changing. So the message is a clear one that if you find yourself battling between this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, realize that it's up to you to design how you share your human capital with the world, and one should never compromise a creative ability for a strategic strength or a skill for a value or a passion for an area of expertise. So I'm encouraging everyone to stir the pot with all the ingredients, hard and soft ingredients that we all possess. And when you do stir that pot, genius shows itself in a beautiful, powerful way.
Mm. So let's talk about what you mean by genius, the other G spot, as you call it. You say everyone has the capacity for genius.
I do. So I believe after conducting over 100 interviews across industries, I came up with 6 ingredients that we all possess that contribute to genius. And to simplify it, I ask everyone that's listening to consider these 6 ingredients in 2 buckets. The first bucket has the 3 ingredients that contribute to who we are on the weekends, and those are your creative abilities, your passions, and your values. This is the side of you, again, that has probably been compromised because of work, unfortunately. The second bucket are the hard professional assets that contribute to our strengths, our expertise, and our skills. What I consider to be everyone's other G-spot, yes, I said it, completely provocative statement, but I believe it to be true, this G being for genius, is located between the hard assets and the soft assets, where the hard side of who you are intersects with the soft, that's where the genius zone is. But the 6 ingredients are simple, and I do believe that everyone innately possesses them. What we do terribly wrong is we have allowed life to degenius us, so we have compromised the soft assets to a huge degree, and I'm asking people to prioritize that. And if you're an uber creative listening and you've compromised your hard assets, then again, I'm asking you to cultivate and pay attention to the strategic side. But most of us in the professional world, most of us working hard every day, we've been conditioned to focus on the hard assets and have compromised the values, the passions, and the creative abilities.
Right, right. You say that a person without a story is invisible. How do you marry that authentic narrative to the themes and your soft and your hard assets, as you call them?
Sure. So through the book, I take the reader through what I call 5 steps towards using and utilizing this genius within all of us. And the second step is express your genius. And I found through my interviews and through my secondary research that a lot of us come close to identifying the genius and have great potential and are exercising it, but just don't express it. And we don't express it for multiple reasons. So in this chapter, I really am encouraging readers to cultivate the art of telling a story. Today, we're living in an era of major communication beyond just 140 characters, and I really believe the authentic story and sharing the soft and hard side of who we are, that narrative needs to be told regularly. I also am encouraging people to take ownership over the themes in their lives that they're cultivating and to share them, because what I've witnessed is the more that people talk about their passions, their creative abilities, their passion projects, their ventures, their entrepreneurial curiosities, the more they act upon them. So in the chapter on Express Your Genius, I really encourage people to identify the themes in their lives, to act upon those themes, and to take responsibility around telling their true story. And I have one recommendation, which is enough with the small talk. We're living during extremely difficult times. We need meaning. We need context. And it's up to each one of us to contribute to a progressive dialogue. And it really does start with our own very own story.
Yeah, absolutely. And the third step in this, the five-step genius plan that you that makes up this book, you talk about you are who you walk with. And we hear this constantly. It's something, you know, parents will tell kids,
yeah,
mind your company. You know,
yes,
you say be intentional. Relationships are choices, not accidents.
Mm-hmm. In general, I really, in my own life, came to realize this when I quit my comfy corporate cocoon to start my own training practice, that I knew I needed to set myself up by identifying 25 people that really inspired me and that were living a life of a thought leader that I aspired to attain, and I also wanted to learn from them. So I made a list of 25 people, and I invite everyone to do the same and then go about those relationships. And within the context of those 25, people fell into really three categories. Yodas, which are wise mentors or sponsors. They can be within your organization or just within your community. And Yodas are important for all of us. Regardless of how old you are, everyone needs a Yoda. The second group of relationships that I realize everyone needs, especially when you're thinking about curating a life around genius, are ambassadors. Ambassadors are people that are constantly connecting you to research, to information, to thought leadership, and to other people. These are the folks that are really tapped in within your organization or in your community that you know that will always introduce you to others. They have a diverse Rolodex, we can say, and ambassadors are important. And my favorite group are fat brains. And I define fat brains as young people under the age of 30. These folks are digital natives. They live in a multidimensional world. I find them to be the greatest untapped resource we have, especially here in the United States. And in Practical Genius, in my book, I'm recommending that everyone identify a fat brain or two to mentor them. Someone half your age today, first time in history, is probably not wiser than you, but definitely has the potential of being smarter than you. So we need to shift the paradigm a bit on how we're looking at Gen Y and the millennials and leverage their assets and their unique genius in a very proactive way instead of treating them as self-serving children.
Yeah, very important to keep up with what's happening technologically, for sure. And yet, it's also, you talk about this too, find what fuels you, and you talk about how important it is to also unplug.
Oh, yeah.
We need to shut down. We need to allow time for things to take shape in our mind to sort through problems.
Absolutely. Practical Genius is a lifestyle proposition. It's not only about fueling the mind, but it's also about fueling the body, fueling the spirit, fueling the heart. And within this step, which is step four on how to sustain your genius, I'm recommending we look at how we manage our time. And I have a rule which I refer to as input first, output second. So in Western society, we obsess over our to-do list. We're result-driven. We wake up in the morning, barely brush our teeth, and are already grabbing for the BlackBerry. And I'm saying, let's stop the madness. Let's fuel ourselves first, whether that's 15 minutes of meditation, 15 minutes of inspirational reading. Let's turn off the technology first thing in the morning and really listen to the body, fuel the body. And I recommend that everyone consider all the content they consume, from what you listen to first thing in the morning, to what you eat, to what you read, to what you watch, and curate your day. Again, the morning is a critical, critical point of the day, especially for the mind.
Right, right.
You have to set yourself up with a morning ritual that's going to fuel your genius versus, again, de-genius you. Waking up, grabbing, you know, barely warm cup of coffee, a bagel, and a BlackBerry out the door. Not a smart way at all
right,
to fuel
right.
your genius. So in this chapter, it's just recommendations on how to be mindful to set yourself up for sustainable genius.
Right. And then the last step, and unfortunately we don't have time to go through this in great detail, but market your genius. This is where the rubber meets the road. And it's so important to know your audience. We can't be all things to all people. And unless until we learn that, we're going to continually fail. I know that from years and years in management. You cannot be all things to all people. Gina, I really appreciate you being with us. This is a really great book. And I love how you end it. You say enough with the conformity, on with the rebellion. Where can people find out more about you, Gina?
Please visit practicalgenius.com. I welcome emails at Gina@practicalgenius.com. And on Twitter, it's Gina Rudan. That's R-U-D-A-N. Vicki, this was wonderful.
Thank you
for having me. And thank you for sharing the genius movement with your audience.
My pleasure. And the book, again, is called Practical Genius. My guest, Gina Rudan. And I want to thank you for being with us. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.